Today's episode is brought to you by Oak Tree Products, the ultimate one-stop shop for audiologists, hearing professionals, and sound professionals. If you're looking for diagnostic or screening equipment, this is the place for you. From the essentials to the hard-to-find tools, Oak Tree has you covered. We've personally been ordering from them for years, and they've always come through. We recently just ordered new diagnostic equipment for four offices through Oak Tree.
During the pandemic, when supplies were hard to come by and everything was up in the air, Oak Tree kept things in stock and moving. They've handled supply chain disruptions, tariff uncertainty, all of it without missing a beat. Whether you're outfitting a new practice or just need to stock up, check them out at oaktreeproducts.com. Again, that's oaktreeproducts.com. We will link to them in the episode description and tell them we sent you when you visit oaktreeproducts.com.
Today's episode is my personal dream come true. We are beyond thrilled to welcome two incredibly talented actresses who helped shape one of the most transformative TV series in recent television history, Vanessa Morano and Katie LeClaire, the leading ladies of Switched at Birth. Vanessa played Bae Kinnish, the artistic and strong-willed teen who discovers she was switched at birth and raised in a wealthy family. Katie portrayed Daphne Vasquez, a bright, compassionate teenager who grew up in a working-class neighborhood who also was deaf, bringing authentic representation to a community too often overlooked. Switched at Birth wasn't just a fan favorite. It was revolutionary. It broke barriers by centering deaf and hard-of-hearing characters and incorporating American Sign Language in a way never before seen on mainstream TV. Through their powerful performances, Vanessa and Katie helped spark crucial conversations and change the way disability is portrayed on screen. In this episode, we talk about their journeys with these characters, behind-the-scenes moments, and the lasting impact of the show on audiences and representation in media. So let's get into it. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you for having us. That was such a lovely intro.
Yeah, absolutely. It made me want to rewatch the show.
Why don't we start all the way from the beginning when Switched at Birth was first posed to both of you? How did you get involved in the show, in the audition process?
I'll start. It was just like any other audition, basically. I started acting at a very young age. There was a thing called pilot season back in the day where all the networks would put out new shows and you would audition for them. Then as cable started becoming more of a thing, pilot season was a little bit more year round. So like network pilot season was happening at the like end of winter, February, but cable pilot season could kind of happen whenever. And ABC Family, which is what Freeform was called at the time, kind of did their new shows more in the fall, end of summer, fall. And so it was one of many pilots they had out. I think it was one of five at that time. And I went out for all of them. And so got hired for Switched at Birth. And so happy that I did. But I would be lying if I said it wasn't just like any other sort of experience. Like you read it, you go, maybe it's going to go, maybe it's not going to go. Half of the show's in sign language. This is never going to get picked up. Please, no one wants subtitles. And boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, my experience was really similar, actually. I had an agent at the time and I got pitched through my agency. And the experience of getting the part was unique, but I was just sort of submitted through my representation like every other role. Then through the process, they asked me if I could try to put on an accent for the show, for the character. And so I did that for the callback and we had a work session. Then we tested. Vanessa, were you at the test? We tested the same time, right?
You were hired first. You were hired first. I was hired last. So this is basically what happened was I went out for all the ABC Family pilots and none of them wanted to hire me. I literally went in for Switched at Birth. They were like, yeah, she did a nice job. Bye. So I didn't. And I had done a pilot for ABC Family the year prior. And so when they tested a round of Bays with you, Katie.
Yeah, I remember. And Zoe Deutsch tested, actually, which is hilarious.
Leah Thompson's daughter auditioned to play her not biological daughter.
No way.
The not biological one.
And so that round of girls didn't go through.
But okay, so you weren't there for that
I was the last one cast.
Okay, so then they cast Constance first, and then they cast me, and then they cast Lucas. This was my first breakout role by any means. And so to be part of the casting process for some of the other characters, including High School Musical's Lucas Graibia, like I was dying to be able to be part of his test and, you know, like chemistry and oh my gosh. And then after they were like, did you feel any chemistry stronger with anyone over and I was like, Lucas, hire Lucas, Lucas Graibia. So yeah.
And when you started filming the early episodes, obviously both of you are hearing. Katie, we'll get to your hearing loss soon, but you also had the deaf actors like Sean Birdy. How was that in the beginning, interacting with the deaf actors? Was there any sort of communication barriers? How'd that
work? So it's interesting. Obviously, I had no experience with anyone in the hearing loss community, getting to Katie's hard of hearing experiences aside later. But me as the person who has no experience with hearing loss or no experience with sign language, that was my first introduction to it. And, you know, it was interesting because Switched was really the first show to try that on television, where we did have hard of hearing cast members like Katie, but then we did have fully deaf cast members like Sean, like Marley, like Ryan Lane, like Daniel, like Stephanie. Like we had at least, I would say, 30% of the cast at one point was completely deaf, and other hard of hearing characters came in as well. And so that pilot was my first time with that. And we had interpreters, so it didn't actually feel like there was any communication issue. I can't express enough the importance of having interpreters for any language, right? Like if you're doing a show and half of the show's in Spanish, there should be Spanish interpreters on set, because it does really alleviate it. Katie's like, gearing up to say
something. And what's really cool, I have to jump in, I'm so sorry. What's really cool about ASL is like the way that SAG works is that each deaf character had, or deaf actor had their own interpreter. So there were moments where we would have like seven deaf characters in a scene and there would be seven interpreters. And what's really cool about American Sign Language is the way the interpreter interprets the language. And so you could be, for an ASL speaker, you could be standing back and watching seven people say the exact same thing in mostly the same way. And then sometimes I would just jump in and be like, hold on, everybody, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this. And like, you know, sort of help facilitate the production
needs. It's
incredibly
helpful that Katie is as fluent in sign language as he is. Yeah. Her background in American Sign Language was invaluable to this production. And I could say invaluable to me because I didn't even know I was going to have to start learning sign language until, you know, episode 9, right?
But you picked it up so, like, everybody was so eager to sign right from the beginning. And you picked it up sort of like curiosity-wise, really quickly. But then you had to learn it.
I think
track,
I was eager,
you know?
Because I knew my character didn't know sign language. So I wasn't going to have to do what Constance did, which was she didn't know any sign language and she had to be fluent, right? I could learn with Bay, which made it a lot easier. Now, did Bay end up becoming more proficient than Vanessa did at one point? And I would say that was probably around season 3. That was my hardest season because it was just like they wanted her so much more fluent than what my capabilities were. And then I probably caught up to her around season 4, season 5.
Yeah, for sure.
When we spoke with Lizzie a little while back, she was telling us about how there were coaches for ASL that were helping everybody. As I'm listening to you talk about the experience, I'm thinking of like traveling to a foreign country where you're immersed in the language to try and pick it up. Can you talk about that season 3 experience where you felt like what was expected of you might have been more than your capability and how you worked through that?
I mean, you just go through it. You just push through it. We had a variety of different quote unquote ASL masters on set, including Anthony Natalier. And then also Jack Jason was kind of serving as like an ASL coach for me because he was coming at it from a hearing person's perspective, learning sign, obviously. So I kind of needed that gateway into it because there was never going to be a point where Bay was going to be speaking at an ASL level of like a deaf understanding of it. It was always going to be a little bit fractured because I was SIMCOMing, simultaneous communication, speaking and signing at the same time. So I can't really do the correct grammar of ASL, which is much more similar to the spoken language of Japanese than it is the spoken language of English. And so, yeah, you just kind of push through it. You kind of adjust. And that was fun to a certain degree with the show where it was like, we have to get really creative in figuring out with what my abilities are as an actor, with what the communication is for the characters in the scene to understand my character and kind of bridge that gap. That was a creativity that there aren't many shows with that aspect to them. I'm not going to lie and say it was not extremely frustrating if I would get a monologue and it would have something to do with fundamental governmental rights. And, you know, Jack would be like, you have to fingerspell that. there's no other option. You oh, have God. To fingerspell wow. that. Like that's there's, and I was like, are you sure she can't just say G-O-V? And that's how Bay says government. There were definitely conversations where we would go back and forth and come to a compromise.
You mentioned the SimCom. Do you feel like it was easier to be doing SimCom because your speech can mask or distract from any sort of sloppy or imperfect sign? Or was it harder because you're doing both things at once?
I mean, for me, I think it depended on it. I did find it easier to be speaking the word and signing the word. It almost felt like choreography. However, that was not easy when the example I just gave where it was like three giant long words and the signs were like 18 different signs that you'd have to do at the same time to match your, like the matching with what you're speaking is hard depending on what the words are. So in that case, it would be easier. Much easier to just be signing.
I feel like my SimCom is great. Like even now, my SimCom is fine, right? But my ASL grammar is terrible. Like always kind of was. And then I did this job. And for the most part, even in the full ASL scenes, we would use ASL grammar, but my ASL grammar is pretty poor.
Most of us don't even realize that there's a grammatical aspect to it. But yeah, of course there
I
is
was,
language.
The other day I was writing down ASL gloss, you know, like I not yet later, you know, like in the order of the ASL gloss. And I was just like, man, this is a different language.
Did you ever receive criticism for how you were portraying the language, or was it generally very well received to be putting this front and center and giving exposure to a segment of our
Look,
population?
Honestly, we were extremely well received. The deaf community was so yeah. supportive of this show. And I think they gave us a lot of grace because it was the first. You know what I mean? It really was. It was breaking down a barrier. This had not been done on mainstream television. It had not been done for young people. It hadn't been done with a teenage audience in mind. It was introducing ASL as a language, introducing the deaf community to so many people who were not exposed to it, myself included. And then it was also giving the deaf community and the ASL community and people who were wanting to become interpreters, quotas, what have you, a chance to see themselves on screen in a way it had never been done before. And like, obviously now that switched had existed and broken down the barrier, there are things that like we know now because we were sort of the beginning and kind of the guinea pig, whereas a hard of hearing character like Daphne or a fully deaf character like Daphne, what have you, maybe would be written differently now with Katie as the actress playing that character. But Daniel and Ryan and Sean having to be on screen and having multiple deaf characters there and each getting to be portrayed and experienced wouldn't be as prevalent now. And especially the idea of like nothing told about us without us, we would not be so championing now had Switch not been able to expose people to here's a bunch of deaf actors. Here's a bunch of deaf actors on screen together. It's not just one token person. It's not just one hard of hearing person. It's like, here is everybody.
And that's not just one episode. It's every episode.
And I give Marlee Matlin a lot of credit for championing us and also championing that aspect of the show as well and saying like, let's get as much deaf representation here as humanly possible. And I think that's why we were well received. I think that's why people still, even if you're going to look back on the show with more of a 2020-25 lens, still it really resonates with people because it took a risk and really exposed that for the first time.
Like it took several risks. The show's content goes to crazy places, even amongst like this backdrop within this deaf world. We're still talking about sexual assault in college. We're talking about racist issues in college. Like, you know what I mean? Like we pushed a boundary really hard right at the beginning. We were like, okay, get on the bus. We're going to do all ASL episodes. We're going to have Deaf President Now conversations. We're going to do all the ASL stuff. But then after that, where do you go? Well, let's keep, you know, trying to tackle difficult subjects and try to have difficult conversations. My favorite thing about this show was that it was made for, we always, you know, kind of callously jokingly said, or truthfully said, it's made for 14-year-old girls and their moms. Let's start a conversation. Maybe what we are talking about is not right. Maybe it's not. Maybe you have a different opinion than what Bay or Daphne chose to do. Maybe that's a conversation starter for a family in their living room. And I'm really proud that our show,
Lizzie and the writers, I think, did a really good job of always making sure multiple points of views were expressed. And that was always a pillar of the show, because by virtue of us being switched at birth, there's multiple points of view.
Life doesn't pause when you're sick. Vaccines against respiratory illnesses can help protect you and give you more playtime with your best friend. Depending on age and health status, vaccinations for flu, COVID-19, RSV, or pneumococcal infection may be recommended. Vaccines can help keep you from having a rough time. Learn more at cveep.org/vaccines-protect. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and CVEEP, fighting infectious respiratory disease.
Make it easier to chat, to try and tackle those bigger issues, because here at the outset of the show, you're bringing something completely new that not just the where do you go next, but hey, we've already done this. Of course, we can go to these places that might be more challenging and might be controversial and might not be easy to tackle.
I don't think it's ever easier. I think it's the same conversation every time, especially when you're pitching an idea to a network about like why you should tackle the subject. Yeah. But Lizzie Weiss loves that. That's where she thrives. She was always, like I said, a champion of pushing the limit, because she truly believed in what we were doing and us trying to do something different on television.
Was there any storyline for either of your characters that was particularly exciting to film or work on, or challenging, that pushed you as an actor?
Love the All ASL episode. I think it's so special. I think we did it, I mean, what was that, 2011 maybe is when it aired? Like, that's so long ago, you guys. And like Vanessa said earlier, when you're talking about pilots and when you're talking about new series as they're starting to really get their feet under them, and that's still season one, right? I mean, our first season was 32 episodes, but it's still
I think it's season
one.
Two.
Is it? Okay.
I could be wrong about that. I'm pretty sure it's season two, though.
So then we're 50 episodes in by that point. So we really trust our team, right? But it felt like we always, one episode per season was always a wild episode. We would have the dance episode, or the what if the switch never happened episode, or the all deaf or the all ASL episode, or what were some of the other
ones? It was definitely a cochlear implant episode.
Mine was the sexual assault storyline. The on-campus assault was a big one. And then we did do a Black Lives Matter episode. Did obviously when Toby and I'm forgetting Rachel Sheeton's character now. Toby and his girlfriend at the time. Literally cannot remember that character's name to save the life of me in this moment. Remember Rachel's name. But they get pregnant and discover that the child has Down syndrome. There really was sort of a like, okay, let's tackle a taboo subject and have a conversation about it. And then, or let's have a dance episode. Like, it was like, it's going to be the most controversial thing in the entire world and create really difficult conversations, or it's going to be a dance episode or a Christmas episode.
Almost like a fantasy show in a way. Cause we had some writers early on, like Chad and James, Vanessa, that were fantasy writers. And so it felt like they were, I don't know, it was just such a creative environment. You know what I mean? Like, what kind of TV show gets to have a dance episode and a Black Lives Matter episode in the same, you know what I mean? Like, we're just, it was so great. So great.
Speaking of creative, how did you perfect Daphne's accent? How did you channel that?
Yeah, I mean, I had spent a lot of time in the deaf culture for years prior to Switched at Birth. And so I had been exposed to deaf culture a lot. And my sister is an American Sign Language teacher for a high school in Utah. And we like really had long conversations about this character and about the ethics of me playing this character and what exactly her accent would sound like, because I wanted it to be as authentic as possible and as realistic as possible. And so, yeah, we like wrote an audiogram for her and then had conversations about what sounds she would be able to say and what sounds she wouldn't be able to say. And
I know, I remember talking about you guys specifically like tracking her hearing loss. Like, it really was treated as a dialect in a way, like you would in like drama school, like, you know, when you go to RADA and they're like, okay, this is that regional Irish accent, these are the sounds, like, and it was very much rooted in what Daphne's hearing loss was assumed at that time, which I think was a little up in the air in the beginning about, was she more hard of hearing? Was she more deaf? And then ultimately,
well, she had a cochlear. And
she didn't have a cochlear. Remember, like, that was the big.
Oh, that she was the have, that was the hero. Yeah, you're right. In the yes. What if she did?
Yes, yeah, you're remembering that earlier. That was when the switch never happened. This is the problem with so many episodes, by the way. Is
you lose track.
No. And the Christmas episode.
Yeah, oh then gosh, I was just in the Christmas so episode. I'm deaf. You know, yeah. We could talk about the ethics of that all day long. So I was like, guys, I think in this situation, it just has to be because it was Bay, you know, waking up and realizing, wait, the switch never happened, but she's still Bay Kennish. Like she's not, it wasn't like the other switch never happened, or the switch did happen, but Regina, they found out about the switch earlier where it was like she was she was raised as Daphne, whatever. All this to say, it was Bay being like, I'm in the wrong household, I'm in the wrong timeline or whatever. And so it was just figuring out how do I, as a person who's not hard of hearing, not deaf, play that. And we kind of just decided the most ethical way to do that would just be from the perspective of if you're a hearing person who just lost your hearing, like you were hearing yesterday. And all of a sudden today, it dropped out.
And yes, that happens.
So, yeah. And I'm like, channeling my father, who now in his elderly age has a tremendous amount of hearing loss, where it's just like, what? What?
In listening to you give that answer and talking about the ethics of playing that role and what sort of potential pushback you might have given, when you're on a project where you're working with people who are really experienced and well-regarded within the industry, and you're younger, young adults, early adult, do you feel like your voice is heard in that situation? Or did you feel like you had to fight to be heard? How is that?
From my perspective, I never felt like I wasn't a veteran in the industry because I've been doing it since I was a kid. So whether that's right or wrong, I did not have an issue feeling like my voice was heard. And I think that came from A, experience, but B, a tremendous amount of privilege that I came up in the industry at the time that I did, where I had worked with a lot of female showrunners. I had worked in a situation where being a younger woman on set wasn't like being a younger woman on set in the 70s. You know what I mean? So like I really benefited from that. I benefited from my mother was in the industry. Wasn't ever coming into that, even though I was the youngest person there. I think Sean and I both were the youngest people there. I didn't feel like I was not on equal footing with everyone.
So the environment that you were kind of professionally raised in was very different from Leah or Marley.
100%. Leah, Marley, Constance for sure. And by the way, having them on set, I think helped us tremendously because
They took us under their wings and they were like, this is how you do it, kids. And in the best, most empowering way possible, in a way where they helped me, I'll speak for myself, but I think all of us, but they helped me find my voice and figure out, you know, sort of when you need to put your foot down and, you know, when it's just sort of like production, because it is a grind and it's a job and it's grueling. And I got to learn from Leah, Constance, Marley, and Vanessa, who all had 30 years in the business prior to that show.
So at 18.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and it felt like we were all a family unit, like almost immediately. Me and Sean, I suppose, but really, like, I was the least experienced person on that set up to that point.
Sean had the Sandlot too, baby. Sean had the Sandlot too under his belt.
That's true. That's true. And so, but right away, I was just like, oh, this is going to be the best. And it was. Yeah.
You're 6 years apart, both of you, give or take?
Maybe.
I guess so.
Definitely connected by just 3 days, I'm sure.
And also, Vanessa's an 80-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
Lady
emotionally,
as well,
so. I'm 150 years older than Katie.
I with the most love possible. And but also, yeah, I mean, I feel like, I don't know. Yeah.
Because I'm sure in your 30s, age makes no difference, but at 18 and 24, it could feel like a big difference in your stage of life. How did you become?
Have you ever felt younger than me, Vanessa?
Tell us more.
This is just saying more again about my 80-year-old tendencies than anything else.
And my like 16-year-old tendencies.
I felt like I would be like, oh, Katie's out going to concerts on the weekend. The noise. I can't handle this. Like, you wild and crazy kids go out
But then you came down and I aged. Like, I think right now we're the same age.
In our 30s, yes. We finally have hit that.
But I think we're like still 29.
Sure.
That's when the clock stops, right?
That's what I'm saying, Eric.
I'll take 29.
So during the show, when you were presented with the storylines, how did you reconcile it if you didn't agree with the way your character was being presented or you didn't particularly like the direction a story was going? How do you reconcile that with your own personal perspective, but then with your professional work?
I think there were probably 3 or 4 times total in the history of the show where either I or Katie went to the writers and were like, I really feel strongly this needs to change. But it was no more than that. And we were lucky. We were working with a very, very receptive group. But I think also because we didn't like pick at every little thing, they knew that if we were speaking up about something, we were speaking up about it for a reason. And you have to understand, television is crazy, right? Like, a writer's room is pitching out an entire season and getting so many notes from network. But by the time it gets to the actors' like table for us to read, they've gone through so many conversations with so many people just to get it to that approval process. So we could be pushing back on something that, like, they're like, you don't understand how long it took us to get to this point. But at the same time, if you're reading something and you're like, that gnawing feeling in my gut, that especially when you're doing something where representation is so important and you really have to stick by it as an actor and stand by certain things, you pick and choose. But if your gut is telling you that that's really important, you need to have that conversation. And from an understanding place of, listen, I know this might have been going through, for lack of a better words, hell to get to this point. But like, I really feel strongly that we're not there yet. Or here's an idea of maybe how we could get there.
As Lizzie talked with us a few months back about this, the tight-knit crew and family that you've become. And we've been seeing that you two have been posting a lot together recently of the memories. Is that something that is less common in the Hollywood world, to have such a tight-knit family? I've seen so many shows where it seems like they're not in contact anymore. They all peacefully go their separate ways, but you all seem to be so close and get together regularly.
I think, Michelle, that was the magic of this show from the beginning, is that Vanessa and Katie didn't hate each other.
It really was. It really was.
Really. Like, from day one, our first wardrobe fitting, when the first time we met each other, like, it could have gone south and it could have been competitive and it could have been either one of us having too big of an ego to hear the other one out. But like, from the day one, we just gelled and we were like on board with each other. And
I have your back, you have my back. You know what I mean?
Since the beginning, like, ride or die, babe.
I mean, I think that's really, really important, I would say, to any young woman who is getting on a television show with another leading actress, is like, become each other's best friends.
We've never been competitive with each other, and really, because like, never.
Ultimately, like, the only other person who's going to understand everything that you're going through is that person. And this is an industry where people do try to make it competitive or do try to put pressure on you to do a certain thing or whatever. And having that friendship, I know I can actually speak for both of us in this situation, is invaluable. Like, I felt so supported by Katie through the whole process, and that it would have been a tremendously difficult, during insane hours for years, to not have that partner.
Does that occur kind of independent of what's happening with the other actors on set? Or is that, like, was that unique to the two of you, or was that a product of the culture of the show?
I think it was a product of the culture. Look, I think Katie and I, knowing who we are, we would have figured any set Katie and I would have been on, we would have gelled. We would have found each other. But I think Constance, Leah, Marley, DW, Lucas, by the way, amazing. Like, cannot tell you how much we love Lucas. It was just because Lucas at that point.
We all still hang out like this. We all still see each other like regularly.
Like a phenomenon. Right? Like an insane a fame that is a level that Katie and I certainly did not have at that point. And he was just so awesome and easy and great. And we all did. We really, really did become a family and have genuine friendships with each other. And I do think you do consciously cultivate that environment, though. I think it does help when the people who are on set for most of the time, whether it be the lead actors, whether it be the showrunner, whether it be the first AD and the DP, right, are creating a lovely, kind environment for people. I think it becomes easier for everybody to follow suit.
Yeah, we've talked with a lot of artists, whether it's people who are in professional sound, whether it's people, musicians, and the people who seem to have the most success are always talking about the role that somebody else is playing in what they're doing. So whether it's a musician and your sound engineers, or we talked to Simon Hayes, who did the sound mixing for Wicked, that he's talking about the costume directors and the actors. And with so many of the people who are successful, it seems like there's a degree of humbleness about them in recognizing that part of their own success is what everybody else is bringing to the table. And it sounds like that's what the two of you are describing in your experience with the show. How does that happen? That kind of magic sauce, how does that happen?
I mean, I think it's luck that you end up with good people. A lot of that is luck. But then it's also how you carry yourself and how are you that person for someone else? How are you that person who is making that sound engineer's life easier? How are you that person who's making your fellow actor's life easier? Does someone feel like they can trust you, that you're going to come up and show up and deliver your lines and do a good job, but also they can trust you in the sense that, like, in that working scenario, I have the Steadicam operator's back in the sense that, like, I will hit that mark because otherwise it's all going to be on him. I think that's only 50% of it. The other 50% is going to be who you're working with and if are they going to meet you at that same side, but you can actively try to be that person for other people.
Is there anything you've learned from each other that you've carried beyond Switched at Birth, either personally, professionally, as you've gone past the show?
I mean, besides Katie teaching me to dunk my face in ice to wake me up in the morning.
For skincare,
but also does wake you up.
Feel like there's a backstory there.
Yeah, right.
I've also taught Vanessa how to camp. Also,
yeah, Katie taught me that I don't want to camp is what Katie has taught.
Okay, so I'll go first. Vanessa's a boss. Like, I don't know if you guys notice, but she gets stuff done. She's on it. She's on the ball. She's hardworking. She's extremely talented. And generally, whenever I feel like, what am I doing with my life? If I call Vanessa Morano, I leave that conversation feeling like everything's fine. We got this. She's so confident. You're so incredible. And you should be, because you're gorgeous and you're talented and you're hardworking and you deserve the whole entire world.
That's so lovely. Thank you, Katie.
So beautiful.
And then, yeah, Katie, I think, has just taught me of like, hey, girl, I'm there. What do you need? Hey, you need this? I'll figure it out. Katie is someone who, if you say, yo, I need to do this, she'll be like, all right, let's figure it out. We're done.
I'll show up.
Cool. How are we doing this? When and where? Yeah. Let's make it happen. Let's do it. She is the person you want by your side in any sort of situation where you feel like you're going to go out of control. Because she's there. Truly.
We'll still go out of control, but it'll be really fun.
It is like, oh, excuse me, chaos? I will figure out how to control this chaos.
And have fun doing it. Like, we can still have chaos, but let's laugh while it's crazy.
During the LA fires, got very, very involved. And it was World Central Kitchen, right, Katie? And like, was just showing up for people, figuring out or organizing food and how people get food. And she's just incredible. She has a heart of gold. And like I said, if it's chaotic, Katie's going to figure out how to control the chaos.
Can you both please work with us? Because I need Vanessa, who gets stuff done, and Katie, who's going to be there as the support.
Yeah.
We need that.
Right? Like, that is what it is. We make a great team, right?
Yeah. Complementing personalities.
Yeah, for sure.
Scorpios.
So, Scorpios. Vanessa, just switching gears slightly, you had a role on Grey's Anatomy. And one of the things I always like to tell my students, it almost sounds silly, but when we're talking to our patients, I've advised students, hey, watch the medical TV shows, because there you have professional writers who are having their doctor characters deliver specific messages and deliver bad news and deliver difficult news. And you can learn something from that, from a professional writer who figures out a way to empathetically deliver something really important. So that's a show that I've always I've found a lot of interesting points in. Can you talk about your experience on
that show? Yeah, for sure. So what was funny about that is Grey's Anatomy had a spinoff called Private Practice. I was on that first. And then I did Grey's. And then I did another Grey's spinoff called Station 19. And my character dies on that. And those writers were so happy. They were like, you survived Private Practice. You survived Grey's Anatomy. But we got to kill you here at Station 19. Big Grey's Anatomy fan, love Shonda Rhimes, was very excited to book that. And I mean, it was a heavy, heavy episode because it was, you know, a girl had been kidnapped when she was 6 and found when she was 18 and all the damage that happened after that. So really, really interesting role to play. Grey's is crazy hours because of all the medical parts of it. Is there is a lot of different ways they have to shoot everything. And it's crazy being the person who's in the bed the whole time because you're just hooked up to all the machines and really can't move for the 16 hours that you are there. But yeah, I mean, as a fan was excited to do it, as an actor was thrilled to do it. Yeah, it was really, really fun. And, you know, Grey's is a show that like really does mean something to a lot of people. And I feel very fortunate whenever I get to be a part of shows that do mean things to people, because it's, you know, an industry that can seem somewhat frivolous at times, but all it takes is having a conversation with someone, even with you right now, to be like, oh no, that's something that's been impactful for my students to figure out how to deliver news to people based off of writers thinking from that perspective of how to deliver news to people. Like that's a really interesting thing that you don't necessarily always think about, how your work as a performer or a writer or a director can have a real world impact in that way.
It took him 5 years to convince me to watch Grey's Anatomy. No regrets.
Well, it's a commitment. No regrets. It's still going on.
Yeah.
It is a long show.
I have 15 seasons to go. Well, one of my last questions for you is, on the podcast, we like to ask people if there's been a time that they've become a part of somebody else's story. So like with us, with our patients, we appreciate all the patients that we get to help, but there's always a subset of patients that have special meaning to us, that either they've impacted us in some way or we've been able to affect their lives in some way. Have either of you had a moment like that where either someone has touched you, affected you in some way, or you've had the opportunity to impact somebody else, either with the show or otherwise?
I'll go first. Vanessa just touched on it, which was my work with World Central Kitchen, which just happened. And it was a really incredible process. I know a lot of people have heard of World Central Kitchen, and I had prior to the fires, and I just really love food. I come from a restaurant family, and I just really love food. I believe in the power of food, and I think that food can provide comfort and structure in a way that is, in those times of chaos, like we were talking about before, just a really grounding place for people to be able to recover from. So yeah, so I got to give out food and be part of the distribution for World Central Kitchen. They're an incredible organization. If anybody has the opportunity to support them, I would highly encourage them. The reason they're so impactful so quickly is because they hire local restaurants that are already in those locations. So that's how they are always the first to respond, and how they are always the first people on site when a disaster strikes. I'm registered to be part of their worldwide efforts. If there, you know, is a disaster, they could call at some point, and maybe I'll go be able to be a participant in somebody's life in another way, Michelle. But I love that question, and I loved so much my opportunity to get to do a lot of service with them.
I'll take it from the perspective of someone who unexpectedly had an effect on my life, which was one of the first roles that was a leading role that I booked was a project that Christopher Reeve directed. It was about a quadriplegic, a woman named Brooke Ellison, who passed away last year. But she was the first quadriplegic to be accepted into Harvard University. The film that Chris directed was about her becoming a quad at age 11. I played her. Lacey Chabert played her in college. Working with Chris was absolutely life-changing. But following Brooke and everything that she did with her life, including running for office, becoming a professor, the impact that she made in so many people's lives, and her mother, who completely changed her life entirely to take care of her daughter and make sure that she still had a meaningful life that did impact people, was something that I take with me every single day.
And one of my last questions would be, do you think there's space going forward for something else with Switched at Birth? Do you think there's any way that you all get back together for something related
Look,
to that
show? Look, I
think
we would all love to do it. I think it
would be
incredibly important to have the deaf community support on how they want to see a next iteration of the show. I think we're all consciously thinking of this is a show that was made in 2011. It is now 2025. We know so much more. We've broken down so many barriers. So it would be paramount to have their support and know how they would want this show to continue forward.
Yeah, when we were talking with Lizzie, she had said that, if I'm remembering correctly, like the show couldn't be made today in the way that it was made then. Is there any way that that becomes restrictive in what could be done going forward? Or is it really just you want to put the best thing out there that speaks to the greatest number of people?
I mean, I think Lizzie's a creative genius. And if anybody could do it, I really do think that Lizzie could figure out a way
to do it. I think there is no question that there are certain restrictions.
There are landmines for sure. So it would be an important navigation, but I really do believe that Lizzie is talented and creative enough to figure out a way to bring it on.
You know, possibly bringing on more deaf representation beyond just actors, deaf producers, deaf director would probably be our best bet in like making sure that we are. Again, continuing the legacy of the show, whose entire legacy was built upon this exposure, to making sure that that community, which is the community that supported this show, made this show what it is, a community that we could not have done this show without, first and foremost, that this is for them, by them.
I feel like some of the key ingredients for a successful reboot or reiteration of a show is when all the main actors want to come back and are clearly invested, and it just sounds like
that
your whole cast.
You'll get us there.
Like if somebody was like, "Can we do it today?" I bet the troops would rally and we would be all there today. Like today, guys.
What you are sharing really reflects the outside of what everybody else sees. We see on the outside that everybody looks so happy, but you never really know what happens behind closed doors, and it just seems like you are all so close and supportive of each other. It's wonderful.
Vanessa and I recently had a situation where we were both having separate conversations with the same executive, and we didn't realize that the executive was talking to both of us. But then at some point, anyway, the long story short, eventually I got to be like, "Hey, and you're working with Vanessa Morano." And he was like, "I didn't say anything because I didn't know how you guys felt about each other." And I was like, "We're best friends. We see each other like twice a week. Like all the time. We see each other so much." So it was really funny that this executive was like avoiding, smart on his part, to just say nothing. But it made both of us laugh so hard because we're like, no. We're like,
and like
actually
the reason we knew it is because we were talking to each other. We're like, then he was like, "I didn't want to rock the boat."
Okay, my real last question for you is, for any of our aspiring actors listening out there, any advice you would give to them coming from very different backgrounds? And Vanessa, you starting super early, Katie, you breaking out a little bit later in your journey for it. Anything you would say to somebody who's looking to break into the business?
And I would add into that also, if deaf or hard of hearing as well.
My advice is always go to school in Los Angeles. Go to not UCLA, USC. Those are fine schools. Go to Cal State Northridge. Go to a community college in Los Angeles. Just start to get your feet wet in this business, in this city, by being in LA. Now, that advice might change because this industry has changed so much and so little films in Los Angeles now. But I do think that my favorite part about this city is that it's a bunch of people who believed in their dream enough to bet on themselves and move across town, across the state, across however, to be in a place with other like-minded creative people. I think this is a great way to get a community and get your feet wet and figure out if this is actually a business that you want to be in. Because this business is really hard. And the only way you're going to be successful is if you get a community with you while you're doing it. So the easiest way to do that is to go to school. And plus, usually you can convince your parents to help you pay for it.
I would say similar, slightly different. As an actor, your probably best bet at building a resume is to be in Atlanta, North Carolina, New Jersey. There's a lot of things that are not filming here. Hopefully that will change soon. Louisiana. That's a great way to build.
Romania.
Co-star roles, you know, those guest star roles, those things that they're not hiring as experienced people for, they're hiring locally. Build your resume in that way if you can. And then it is moving to the reason to be in an LA or the reason to be in a New York is because of the community that you built. And truthfully, the jobs you will get will be from friends helping you. And don't just be friends with actors. Be friends with aspiring directors, be friends with editors, be friends with people in sound. Like that, it takes a village to make something. You can create your own stuff, do it.
True.
Because A, that's how you learn. And B, there is value in you being the creative force behind something.
Well, and ultimately, like if you're an actor and you're just an actor, you're the last person to get hired on every single project. And I am just too much of a control freak to sit and wait. I cannot stand that. So that's why I started to try to produce and started to create projects as well. But I think the days of just being an actor are kind of done. Like, I think you have to be multi-hyphenated to be successful in 2025.
As far as being a deaf performer, getting involved with like the National Association of the Deaf, or specifically Deaf West Theater, I think is very important. And I think also, even, you know, whether you're deaf, hearing, what have you, getting involved in a theater company in general is great, because as we just said, it's like building a community.
I so much appreciate your perspectives and the art and the work that you've put out into the world and the way it's really positively influenced a lot of people. Why don't you let everybody know where they can follow the projects that you're working on and where they can connect with your work?
Or if they want to see you open Switched at Birth mementos like your recent reels.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me on Instagram, Vanessa Morano, that's where you're going to get the most updated information about me. I'm very excited. As a writer, I'm going to have 2 Christmas movies on Hallmark this year, which is very exciting.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. So that's the new projects in the pipeline for me.
And I'm on Instagram at Katie LeClaire, LeClerc. And what do I have in the pipeline? I don't know. Not much.
You have a Christmas movie that's probably coming out this year.
Yeah. I do have a Christmas movie coming out this year. Hopefully this year.
I'm glad Vanessa can plug that for you.
I'm sorry, you're the best. See, what would I do without her?
And we'll link to all of that in the episode description.
Thank you so much, Katie and Vanessa, for joining us today, for sharing your stories about the show, hearing about your journeys in the business through the years. It is so evidently clear that beyond the success of the actual show, it brought out this lifelong friendship for the both of you and along with the rest of the cast. So thanks again for chatting with us, and we look forward to seeing what comes next for you.
Thanks, guys.